Do you wish you could get virtual attendees to turn their cameras on? Is engagement the number one issue on your virtual meetings? Do you want your meeting to be the most engaging virtual meeting? Well, welcome to the Engaging Virtual Meetings podcast. In this podcast, we'll talk to the top people around the world in virtual meetings and give you, the listener, the best ideas to host engaging virtual meetings. Make sure that you click subscribe so you can get the latest episode of the Engaging Virtual Meetings podcast. Now, let's welcome your host, the author of the number one Amazon hot new release, Engaging Virtual Meetings, John Chen. All right. Amazing start to this year. It's January. We got great things going on. I'm so excited. I actually helped a friend with a book launch this morning about intelligent courage. And so it's so great to see all the different ways virtual can really be set. We had guests from Nigeria, from Africa, from all over the United States. And so just so excited to that, you know, for not very much budget, you can do some great things, and we had some great leaders in the natural resources industry all through the year. So that's what I got a chance to work on today. And now, you know, it's so funny. I had a opportunity for another speaker in Saudi Arabia. So you've heard me talk that I do some great work in Saudi Arabia. So I put a call out. And for those who don't know what EO stands for, it stands for Entrepreneurs Organization. So I put it out there. I've been a member in the past. I put it out there, and I asked for other speakers who might be in that area, have some expertise to bring around with that. And so I got a response from this amazing person. And while she didn't find out to be a fit for this speaker part, of course, here in EO, one of the things that we do is love meeting other business owners. And let me just tell you, you want to meet this business owner. She has definitely done some stuff, is the light, the very light version. And we're going to get into it and share some of the things that she's done. And for those who are thinking about offboarding, not onboarding, by the way, offboarding, like how can entrepreneurs do more? And then what are you going to do, you know, after you entrepreneur on this part? This is actually good too. This goes out to my good friend, James Gritson, who just announced that he is leaving his existing company that he founded so long ago. This will be a great topic for people like him. Let's welcome Michelle Hecken. Hello, Michelle. How are you?
Hi, John. I'm great. How are you?
Fantastic.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. What did you do great with your family, either over the holidays or New Year's? I'm just kind of curious.
Oh, well, I have two daughters, and one of them lives in New York with her husband. The other one lives in Vancouver with her fiance. And so having everybody together is always the big highlight, and it doesn't always happen as often as we'd like. And then I also have my stepkids. So it was fantastic. Unfortunately, some of the airlines, the fiance couldn't come and my stepdaughter missed Christmas, but it was still amazing to have as many of us together as possible. So we had a lovely Christmas. Great start to the new year. Thanks, John.
Yes, we have this tradition called everybody's birthday dinner, where all of my brothers and sisters, and for the first time in a couple of years, my son also came. So all the family members come together. We celebrate with one birthday dinner. And this year, my dad booked a 3 Michelin star restaurant.
Wow, amazing.
There's only 142 of those in the world. And I got to tell you, it was a culinary experience. But what was really more important was all of us getting together. You're right. Yeah. So, you know, there's nothing like family over the holidays. And speaking of family, though, we were part of the EO Family Entrepreneurs Organization. I was a member here in EO Seattle. And that's how we found each other. Michelle, I introduce you to the rest of my family. There's a lot of people online watching. So can you just share, who are you? And of course, what are some of the amazing things that you do?
Okay. So I'm Michelle. I'm an entrepreneur. I ran a couple of companies, but one really predominant one that I founded when I was, I think, 23, ran it for over 25 years, built it up. And what really makes this different is that I built it early on to run without me. At a very early stage where people told me I was crazy and I, you know, what am I doing and it'll never grow. But it did, and it grew faster and it created more value. And I had an exit in 2019. And having what I call offboarding in place, or having had that in place for many years, it made the sale easy. I got a bigger multiple. But more importantly, in the 15, 20 years before my sale, I was able to live my best life while growing my company and while building value in the organization. So what I do now is I am passionate about helping other entrepreneurs and top performing leaders create that same experience for themselves, where we let go of being a slave in the company, we let go of all of the shoulds, we let go of thinking we have to be seen in the office every single day, and really through my process figure out how can we optimize this so that everybody's working 80% of the time, doing what they love, creating more value for the organization, having more free time to live their lives, because we only have one.
We only have one. You know, Michelle, yeah. You said best life, and you remind me of a recent study I heard. Maybe I heard it from you, which was they pulled a bunch of entrepreneurs. Do you feel like you have control of what happens in the company? And like 80 to 100% of them say, yeah, I do. And then you ask the question, how many of you are like in the 20 to 40% range? So, So how do you like balance those two? And give us some idea, what were some of the things that are in your best life so that others can be inspired by what you created?
Yeah, actually, that was a statistic that I discovered my superpower and what do I have of value. It really was interesting for me to verify some of the theories that I had. And the theories were that so many entrepreneurs start a business and then become a slave to their business instead of having the business serve them. And that's true whether it's a $1 million or $100 or $1 billion business. If we don't know, your question was about the best life. If we don't know what we want in our lives and what's important to us, then we will always be reactive to the business. And I was really shocked at that response. It's like, how can entrepreneurs, when we're in control? I mean, I believe that as entrepreneurs, we are so well positioned to design the life of our dreams, to change the world through our companies and to have a real impact. And instead, I see so many of us burning out, not doing what they want to do. And I just felt like, okay, maybe this is time for this book. Maybe this is time for me to talk about it. And the first thing I always talk about is get clear on what your best life looks like.
Yeah. Thank you, Michelle. You know, as a consultant, as a facilitator, I have some really easy, tough questions. And what I mean by that is, you know, if you remember these words and ask them often, you'll find out how few people can really answer it, right? What do you want?
Yes.
And it sounds really simple. And if you really like ask somebody and maybe repeatedly or really ask the deep intent. So, you know, they might say, oh, I want a fast car, or I want a big house or something like that. That's not what they really want. Like if you really ask the question, you get to something else. So in your coaching with other people, I'm kind of curious, what have other people said when you feel like they got to their authentic answer?
It's really interesting. It's a process. So I kind of walk them through it. And what's really important is, you know, John, when we're kids, And you know, people ask kids, say, what do you want to be when you grow up? Yeah. And there's no inhibition, right? I'm going to be a firefighter and have my own dragon, or I'm going to be a princess and live in a castle with three princes and five unicorns. I don't know. But there is no shame when you ask little kids what they want to be, because everything is possible. They don't know what's not possible. Right. And as we grow up, it's so much harder because I should be doing this. I should have a great career. I should have a nice car. I should have all of these things. And my business has to grow and bigger and bigger and bigger, even if that's not what I want in my life. Right. Yeah. So it's a hard process to go through. So what I always ask is, I said, imagine 10 years from now. Right. Because if we think 3 to 5 are leadership brain immediately goes to, is it achievable? Is it, you know, how do I do it? And we don't want to do that. So getting to that, and when we uncover those layers, I've had people say, oh, I thought I wanted, you know, a house here and a house here. And But what I really want now that I think about it is a place where I know my entire family will love to come to, and they will be there more often. That's one example, right? Or I have to grow my business by 25% a year, or I have to do this. And then when we dig deep, it turns out they're really burnt out and they're not happy in their everyday life. And so I do that. But the second component of this is really in really figuring out how it works. So we know, okay, we're clear, we've been honest with ourselves 10 years from now. But what constitutes a good life today? And those two things have to be in congruence, because we can't just live for the future. We need to know where we're going. Otherwise, we have no passion, no drive. But I look at every day as a mini life. And I think about in the morning, okay, what do I want to do with my life today? It's a mini life, because every day adds up to be your life. So that's when you make the change. And we talk about living in the present, but again, nobody tells you how to do that. And so a simple way that worked for me is I said, okay, what constitutes a good day? What do I need to have in my day every day to feel good? Small things like I want to have a good laugh every day. I want to have a meaningful conversation. I want to connect and feel love and give love. I want to give back. I want to learn something new. So it's just kind of part of my running list. And so, yeah, I think about that every morning. And what's cool is, you know, the day is going to throw you a curveball. The mini life is going to throw you a curveball. Maybe your technology doesn't work. Maybe somebody comes and just annoys the crap out of you. Because it happens, right? Or you get fired or whatever happens, right?
Okay, wait, Michelle, I got to try this new trick too, because I really love this. Okay, here's my best new trick. Ready? See if it works. Live your best mini life.
I love it.
You need shirts that say this. Live your best. Not live your best life, live your best mini life, which is like doing it a day at a time, right?
Yeah, if you're living your best mini life, then you're going to automatically have a good life. But you, one, need to know where you're going, big picture, 10 years. But also, what are the attributes that you want to have in your life every single day? And those two things together then really kind of keep you on track, and you can check in with yourself.
Mm. So, you know, out of that, there is a couple things I think that are in there. I mean, number one is that, like, I discovered, like, you really don't want a house in somewhere else, because you can only live somewhere. You know, what I've discovered is that if I actually also like variety, like the impact of going to a new place to me is better than owning a place, you know, like that. So I find that, you know, there are definitely times when you should rent something, right? Which is because it's better. It's like a boat, right? If you're only out 3 weeks of the year, then rent a boat as opposed to own a boat. And you'll find that you can have the life. You can live your best life, and it'll cost you probably an eighth or a tenth of what it would cost if you think ownership is there. It's like you got to think about what the experience is. Now, the other part too for me is that the pandemic really turned into probably like one of the biggest coaching interventions for myself. And what I mean by that is that I was traveling. You know, I do 120 events a year, and so I was traveling quite a bit, and the pandemic stopped all that, and I was kind of already kind of in the mental space of like, I could be done with traveling. Like, it wasn't like critical, but it was definitely not being the charm that it used to be years ago. And then, of course, all this stopped, and so it wasn't bad for me. In fact, it was good, and so over the last 3 years, I've actually lived my new version of my best life, which is here. Right. Everything is within 16 steps of, you know, that's my commute. And I still get to touch people all around the world. And I actually, to me, I felt some of my life is better virtually than it is in person. And so, and other things, you know, like when you're traveling, it's really hard to be regular and like sleep and exercise and all these things. I found I could do all those things. So that coaching intervention, you know, it turned out to be a win for me personally. And even my business model actually got better during that time. And so, you know, that a lot of you've probably seen a lot of leaders change in the last 3 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, a lot of it for the better. And we always focus on what was bad. And you know, it was a lot of people lost their business. A lot of my friends in Yo lost their business, or, you know, really almost lost their business, completely reinvented themselves. And I see a lot of them who are doing better than before, right? So I think that's what also makes us as entrepreneurs, that we do look at different opportunities and what's next, right? So I just want to really quickly circle back to your question then, because it was so profound what you said. The question of what do you want?
Yes.
I truly believe that we can all have everything we want in our lives, but the biggest obstacle is making a decision saying, I want that, and getting clear on it. Because if we're clear, it happens.
Oh, I got to share this too. So thank you to June Riley and Curtis Calhoun who are watching us live right now. Hey, feel free to chat, Michelle, any questions if you want to. Now, recently I'm in a new entrepreneur coaching group, and there was a contest to achieve a certain revenue mark. And I was the first to say, all right, well, so what are your goals this week? Well, I'd just like to win the award to get the first, you know, be the first person to get to that mark. And last week, I didn't know because I didn't really do the numbers, but last week I found out that I was the first.
Yay. Congratulations. That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. There's nothing better in entrepreneurship than winning, right?
Agreed. maybe learning. But you know what? True. If you learn a lot, you win more often.
Winning is slightly better than losing most of the time.
Most of the time. Agreed.
What I noticed from that, Michelle, I was the only person who stated weeks before, I want to win this thing. Mm-hmm. And so that gets to the power of your words and your intention or your goals or whatever you want to call it, knowing what you want. Yeah, and again, I did not consciously work on this goal.
It was clear.
Yeah, I knew the goal, but I didn't consciously work on this goal. And then the goal actually came true without me having almost no effort-ish.
Right. But if you hadn't said it, maybe you would have chosen to put your energy into different things.
That's right.
And while it seems unconscious making that statement, you're going to be more aware and you're going to put your energy into different things, right? The same way, if I'm asking myself, where do I want to put my energy in my mini day or in my mini life, right? Because where I put my energy manifests my life. If I also paint, I'm an artist, right? And sometimes I get in my own way. I really want to paint today. And then it's like, oh, okay, it's going to take me 50 minutes to set everything up. And then I have to have enough time, you know, blah, blah, blah. Otherwise the paint's going to dry. It makes all the stupid stories I tell myself. And then sometimes I don't paint. But if I make it really clear and say, I'm going to make progress, I have 4 paintings I want to get done this month. Then somehow I don't get in my own way, right? Yeah. Because I'm directing okay, I want to put my energy to painting today. Okay, cool. Easy.
And then for us as entrepreneurs, either two things has to happen, right? One is that you said you made a painting for somebody else, like a gift, because as entrepreneurs, most of the time we're geared to do more for others than ourselves.
Yeah.
Even though you get the joy out of it, like creating the painting. The other one is that you sold the painting.
Yeah.
So now you're contractually obligated to do the painting. And that's when you find out whether you love something or not, right? Because you should love the process of it. Speaking of love the process, how virtual were you before March of 2020?
I love that you asked that question, because we had a bit of a chat about it when I joined one of your previous live sessions, which is always, always worth joining. I really had a great time. And it was funny because I think I told you I clicked the link by mistake, and I really was supposed to jump in another meeting like 10 minutes later. And I'm like, oh, no. And now I can't leave because he saw me. And then I was so happy that that you saw me and that I left, because I learned so much about you, and definitely worth it. So before March 2020, so I sold my company January 16th, 2019. So 2 days ago was my 4th anniversary of the sale. But before that, I owned for over 25 years a global language translation company, translation agency, and we worked with law firms all over the world. So I started this company, talk about remote, John. I started this company when I was 23, 24, something like that. Don't do the math. But
I was going to say that's last year, right?
Aww.
Wait, Michelle, that's last year.
I love the Zoom filters. Thanks, John. That's right. I founded my company in 93, 94, and I was living in Germany. I just moved to Canada. I had one client, which was a car manufacturer, big company, and I was doing freelance translations for them. And we were moving the whole family to Canada. I wanted to be closer to my mom, who was living here. And I said, look, guys, This is awesome. I know you don't want to lose me for the translations, but here's what's going to happen. There is a new invention called the fax machine. 93. Yeah. Right? Pre-internet, yes. John, pre-internet. Yes. I was remote pre-internet. So I basically went to them and say, okay, your stuff is always urgent. And, you know, fax me your translation when you go home at like 5 or 6 o'clock. And that's exactly when I'm getting up. And then when you come back in the morning, your translation will be there. I'll magically fax it to you. And so that was what I always kind of called my purple cow. And it grew from there. So I was remote from day one, John, and people thought I was nuts. How are you in your mid-20s in a new country, working for people remotely? You know nothing about business. Build your company locally first. And I'm like, but it's a translation company. And this is where I have the most value. So for many years, I remember then after fax, internet, I taught my clients how to upload files with Zmodem.
Wait a second. Wait.
Like, what is that?
For some of the people who are online who don't know what a fax machine sounds like, it should sound like this. Oh, wait a second. Hold on. I'm on mute. Let's see if I can get it right. Oh my gosh. This was your gold mine, right?
Yes.
This noise right here.
That's exactly what it was. And you know, it's funny. So I help clients implement the new technology, then trying to convince clients in Germany to accept files via internet, which was largely suspicious and probably dangerous and all of those things. So we then had, as the company grew, we had clients all over the world. We had project managers all over the world. We had translators all over the world. And so we had a very small home office here, but we had very few clients locally. Our project teams were distributed around the globe in different time zones. And so I was really, really intrigued to hear that you, John, too, have been doing virtual meetings for 30 years. And so, yeah, March 20th, 2020, everybody was like, oh, my God, what do we do now? And part of me, because I'd already sold my company, was going to go say, I can help. But I really was still in my like do nothing mode. But I've actually talked to a few people and helped them set stuff up for fun because, you know, I know how to do it.
That's great. I love that
you're the guru. I wish I would have known you then. You could have made it so much better, John.
Well, I got to tell you, 35 years I was on this thing, the Prodigy, right? This is 35 years ago. And hello to Stephanie Messman, who actually was part of the contest that I won, and Beth Hughes, who just got off a cruise. Welcome to both of you. You know, and so I was on this. And the worst part about it, Michelle, is there's nothing worse as an entrepreneur than being ahead of the curve. And what I mean ahead of the curve, I teach people all the time too about entrepreneurship. And entrepreneurship is your dream meeting the world's pocketbook. Right. Yes. Whatever your dream is, right? Whatever your passion is, and then meeting the world's pocketbook. And so I tried to do this, and people for years said, that's great, but you got to fly. All right. And so that's why I had to face to base business. And I wanted this business like 20, 30, 35 years ago, but nobody would do it. And we could see the potential, like, you know, especially when people started offsourcing, right? So outsourcing to India and all these other countries, and we're going, you're going to have communication problems because you're going to be talking to them mainly over the phone and email, all right? And so we knew that and already had team building initiative. Nobody would buy it, Michelle.
It's very interesting. After, like, I think about 5 years or 3 or 5 years before I sold my translation company, I started another company. And what we were looking to do is help our clients who are already doing multilingual transactions and cross-country global transactions. We worked for big law firms mainly. So a lot of deals and transactions going through. And we built this other company as a supplement to say, you know, cultural competence training, how is business done differently? How do you understand? It probably was more than 5 years ago. And in addition to providing interpreters, we were also offering to provide cultural consultants who can walk through the meeting. I mean, if you're negotiating $1 million deals, you want to know not just the language, but you want to know, am I supposed to go out for dinner? Am I supposed to drink? Why are they leaving the room? What is happening? What are those things? And we started that company.
Wow.
Same as you. Too soon. Too soon. It was 5-6 years later where people are like, oh, we need some cultural competency training. Oh, we need some diversity training. It's like, oh, we should really understand the culture of the company, of the country we're doing business with. And like you, I was 5 years too soon and it didn't work. It was too much education, right? If you have to do too much education with a new venture, then it's typically a sign that it's too early.
So you're just saying you're sharing one of your early entrepreneurial quote unquote failures, right? It was a lesson. And so again, you tried to do this thing and it looked right at the time. Don't get me wrong. That's why you spent time and energy on it.
I was ahead of the curve, as were you.
Yes, too far. When you're ahead of the curve, it's hard because you can see it. And then 6 years later, and sometimes you're totally out of position now.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you moved on and did something else. And then 6 years later, somebody comes in and goes like, I'm a competency trainer. And then they start killing it, right?
Yeah, I know. And then that's actually exactly what happened. But by that time, I was like, okay, that's fine. It wasn't meant to be. And obviously, I mean, yeah, sure. Did we make some money? Yes, of course. But it didn't blow up like I had anticipated it to. So, but hey, everything happens for a reason. Now I'm doing something that I love every single day. So,
okay. Well, tell me about this then, because you've been in remote cultures, especially but now, and of course now, I think you're doing a lot of your coaching and other activities here in virtual. Mm-hmm. What has to happen for you for a virtual meeting to be engaging?
That's a great question. And by the way, like I said, I wish I would have known you sooner, because in my old company, we used to do our weekly huddles. We didn't do daily huddles because it was too hard with all the time zones, but we did the weekly huddles and always camera, always engaging. We always had an agenda. So the number one thing for me, have an agenda, know what you're going to be talking about, at least know what you want the outcome to be. If it's just a chat, then it's just a chat, but be clear, because I really do feel like having too many meetings, whether virtual or in person, is a huge killer of productivity. Mm-hmm. But if we don't have too many, then people actually look forward to the virtual meeting. So I think the first one is have an agenda. Yep. Two, make sure you're not like overpowering people with too many virtual meetings.
Yep.
Right. Because if you're a programmer, if you're a creative, if you're somebody who needs blocks of time to be creative, having an hour between meetings completely kills your day. Like it's impossible. The startup energy needed to get back into it negates itself when you know that you're going to have to stop again in half an hour. And I'm like that too, right? If I'm going to write, I can't be interrupted.
It's like the painting thing, right? It takes 50 minutes to get into it. And then if you paint, you start to exponentially do more and more and more work. But if you like just get to here and then you like stop, really get to here, stop, right? You don't get a lot done.
You don't. Exactly. Yeah. That's the perfect analogy. So I would say being delivering what you promise. So starting on time, ending on time, but engaging people. Like the worst Zoom meetings are when just one person talks and it's formal business and nobody's paying attention, right? Everybody's doing something else. Because that's the thing. If you're in person, you have an audience. You know if people are paying attention or not. You don't know if somebody's checking their email or not, right? So keeping people engaged, I think, is really important. But I'm sure you have a much better list than me off the top of my head. What would you say are the most important things to make a virtual meeting engaging?
Well, you know, I have a lot of stuff in here, but because I want to share one story before I go through.
Yeah.
And I had a sales team and he was telling me the biggest problem they have is that people are multitasking during the virtual meeting. And he goes, what do you do? And I said, just end the meeting. I'm like, he goes, what? And I'm like, end the meeting. They're not paying attention anyways. Why bother? Let them single task on something and be better at it. Right. And then go back. If you are the host or in charge of the meeting, then design a better meeting. Design a meeting that your salespeople will be interested in. Because by the way, salespeople are interested in stuff. They don't want to meet for non-meeting sake. But if you meet and show them how to make more money, they will be in that meeting.
Right. And so exactly. Make sure the topic is compelling and piques your audience's interest. Absolutely.
Yeah, valuable. Because I always look at, and you should look at, it's not just virtual minutes, but I think virtual minutes are even more accelerated than in-person minutes, which is that you don't have a lot of them, right? There's this invisible timer. If you suck, right, it goes down like this. And if you're engaging or you're valuable, you can buy back more time to keep on in the meeting, to keep people's interest is what that, and that's what I'm gauging, you know, as nonverbal communication and reactions from people all the time is saying, is this valuable? Is this designed in such a way? People appreciate that too. They go like, oh man, this meeting was designed to achieve its goals. So I'll take this book release party this morning, right? We had a bartender because he wanted to do a toast. He had a bartender with 1 million views, dude. This bartender's got 1 million views on his video. So it was really cool. Great setup. He had a magician, a guy who I've worked with, Jeff Evans here. He's on virtual all the time. And then had a dance person. And so, you know, the first part of the meeting was all movement and engagement and like 10, they were 10 minute segments. And so something was happening all the time. And then, you know, and he opened up with, this is the inspiration behind the book. And then in between, he would do a segue. Here's some things. And then the last thing was a panel because 8 people contributed to the book. And so I thought it was great, meaning that everyone who attended came back and said, this was a great meeting. This was great. Because they also wanted to celebrate, right? Because you told me you got a book out. In spring, you have a book coming out. So are you planning a book release party or something?
It's really funny. So the first book that just got launched and it got bestseller on Amazon in 3 categories. So shout out to Andrea Houston, who pulled this together, and the 9 other amazing co-authors. There were 10 co-authors on a book called Lead Like a Woman. And as you were telling this, I was thinking, okay, I need to have a chat with Andrea about this, because that would be really fun to have all the authors on a panel. And then for my other book, we're just as soon as we kind of get a little bit closer to the launch date, then I do want to have a party. And John, my challenge is I'm in Edmonton.
Yeah.
The people I know, my audience is all over the world, because again, I have a global coaching and speaking company, right? I can't just do anything locally. It's just, I guess, I don't know. It's just not who I am. But I was thinking, like, how would I do that? And you just gave me some great inspiration there, John.
Well, thank you for that. And you should have that inspiration. You know, that the key here is that not many people are authors. It's, you know, I do like to say about authors, like in goals, it's one of the things that nobody can ever take away from you.
Oh, that's true.
Right? Like climbing a mountain. I'm very passionate about climbing mountains. And when you get a summit, it doesn't matter who you are or how gifted or non-gifted, privileged, non-privileged you are. When you get to the summit of a mountain, you earned it.
Yeah, that's true.
And an author is a very much the same way, because it's so many people that said, I want to write a book, and then stopped.
And then they don't. Right. You know what? Thank you for saying that. I think it also touches on a point where, as successful entrepreneurs, we do stuff, right? We get stuff done. We set our intention. We say, I want this. I want to win this competition, or I want to hit this goal, right? And so we go and we do. So what we do seems really normal for us. It doesn't seem like a big deal. So when we do things like write a book or co-write a book, thanks, John, there it is. It'll be out on paper back, I think, next week. Amazon, I think, was a little slow, but should be out on paperback soon. But when we do things that are special to others, and other people say, hey, by the way, you know, that's amazing, I feel like sometimes we tend to go like, yeah, well, really, it wasn't a big deal. So thank you for saying that. I think we can all lift each other up as entrepreneurs by, you know, recognizing that we do some great stuff, even though it feels pretty normal to us.
Well, it always feels normal to us, right? But you know, that's why you're an EO, because then you get around other people and you're like, oh, and then you start feeling like an underachiever, right?
Of course.
Some of these people are just so amazing, but you got to know that, you know, this is why entrepreneurship is also like this too, to success. I just celebrated the 25th year of my company.
Yay. Congratulations.
Did you know, right? Less than 4% of all companies ever make it to 25 years.
I did not know that. Wow.
Right? It's also the same for $1 million, right? It doesn't sound like a lot for us who are entrepreneurs, but to get to 1 million It means that you're in the top 4% of U.S. companies.
Wow. Okay. See, that just looks at it, makes you look at things a whole lot differently, right?
And maybe that's the important part. This is what coaches, great coaches do too. They change your perspective on stuff you already know.
Exactly. Well, because at the end of the day, we're all in charge of our own story, and not just our entrepreneurial story, but our everyday story. So, you know what I said about my painting, right? It takes this much, but that was a story that I'm telling myself in my head. So I can tell myself a completely different story at any moment. And the coach is bringing awareness to saying, is that really true? Could you tell yourself? And, you know, we as coaches, we like to talk about limiting beliefs, but really all it is how are you talking to yourself today? What are you telling yourself, right? I am followed by anything becomes true. So like your win on your coaching group, right? I am going to win this.
Well, I appreciate that too. And what is the other piece? Oh, I just wanted to share with you and talk about support. I just bought your book. So there you go.
Oh, thank you. That's amazing. Thank you. I hope you loved all of the stories. Like, it's just such a beautiful mix of perspectives and how we've been audacious as women entrepreneurs and of course as entrepreneurs. And the stories are just really, really inspiring. And I had some real takeaways from some of the stories as well.
All right. So, women entrepreneurship too is really a key. I'm one of your allies, right? I'm the male ally to truly women businesses around here. And I have a lot of women entrepreneur friends. What's the one thing you really want to tell them that can help all these amazing women entrepreneurs who are out there? And there's sometimes their challenge and struggle. You know it. You've done it too. What's the one thing from your seat that you would like to share with all of them?
I have a lot of things that I'd like to share with them, but I think one of the biggest things is really this: do it your way. And what I mean by that is, when I started my business, you know, in my early 20s, I reached out. I didn't know all of the potential role models, mentors, and at that time were men. And men dominated in business. Men still dominate in business if you just look at quotas and how many women and all of that. But what happens is, if we only ever see one way to do it, then we miss out on what we bring to the table. So do it your way. Learn from what everybody else, like male energy, anybody's energy, to be completely politically correct. But this is like right now, male versus female energy. So I hope nobody shoots me out there for being incorrect, but that's kind of what I'm talking about at this moment. And looking at role models. And I find that, you know, there's a lot of great male energy that we can take, that we can learn from.
Yeah. Yes.
But if we only try and do that, then we're kind of also going against our nature and leaving a lot of amazing skills and intuition and things on the table. So I would say, do it your way, connect with other women, find yourself both male and female leadership role models, because we both have amazing aspects that we can bring to the table.
I think there's a crossover that's happening too now, finally, which is that, you know, it used to be you had to be a certain way to succeed in quote unquote a man's world. Yeah. And now many people and many organizations are finally realizing that it's sometimes better with the woman's perspective.
Right. And some things are better with a male perspective, and some things are better with a combined perspective. I mean, think about it, you know, classic dilemma resolution. This is true, and this is also true. So yes. What do? We end up here and we compromise and we lose half of the stuff that's important. But what if we could learn to look at, oh, this is a man's perspective. Where is he coming from? What can I use from that? What's good about that? And vice versa. And now you come up with something better instead of a measly compromise.
A measly compromise. You know, the other part too, I've been really fighting for, Michelle, is investigating Asian Pacific Islander issues, where there are many times, like here's the stat right now, Asian Pacific Islanders in America have 200% or twice as many advanced degrees, like bachelor's and higher, but we hold 50% or less of the executive jobs.
Mm-hmm.
VP, CXO. And so, that's really one of the keys that I'm in a program called Executive Development Institute, which I also facilitate the team building event for. And it just says, figure out how to do these things, but also in your style. And so it's great. Like, for instance, Asians, on stereotypically, as some people have said, they're more quiet or reserved. And what this class has done for some people is that they said, even though you have that style, you can use that style, but you can use it to your advantage. Right? Like most of the time, people like in American culture blab like this, right? I clock about 180 words a minute if I can go on and like, and so this is kind of the American style. But if you come into a meeting and you just watch and you wait, and then like the last thing, like in the last 12 minutes, if you can drop the bomb on the meeting because you've been listening and observing and do it in such an authoritative way, you can really have a presence and power. And so that's like, for instance, I'm just saying, like, women have a different way, but Asian Pacific Islanders have a different way. And so that's one of the ways to take advantage of what you're great at. It gets me back to this last piece, which I think authenticity trumps everything.
Agreed, 100%. And it's interesting because so my life partner is Nigerian, and you mentioned you had some people from Nigeria on your previous show. He's been in Canada for over 20 years. He came here for his postdoc. He's a scientist and an entrepreneur as well. And it's very funny because I have this thing talking about advantages, right? I'm an external processor or live thinker. Okay. And sometimes I try ideas on for size and I talk them out loud. So that's my style. Okay. My partner is basically will internally think about it and he's like birthing a pearl, right? I know what he says is going to be good if I can only shut up long enough to not interrupt him in his process, right? So
Yes.
it's great learning because I know that if I do, I miss out on something really valuable. And he knows if he expects me to think it through before I talk, nothing will come, right? I need that. So if we're working with our authenticity,
Yes.
then we can also learn to manage our authenticity, right? So I know a drawback for me when I do that with my teams, or when I used to do that with my teams, is sometimes they would think it's marching orders. And I'm
Oh,
like,
yeah.
no, I'm just trying this on for size. So I came up with this analogy of, okay, these are five dresses I'm taking to the change room. I'm going to try them on. I'm going to twirl around in them. And I might be close to buying one, but I don't know. And once they understood that, it was easier, right? There's like, and I
Yes.
would always preface like
Yes.
thinking out loud, trying on for size, and they would know. So it's like being in your authenticity, but
Yes.
not beating other people over the head with your authenticity, forcing them to do it your way, but to understand what your impact of how you do things is.
Yeah, the heads up is just like, so you just know what's coming and the expectations. It's kind of like you set the agenda. Like for the next 12 minutes, I'm blabbing, right? It's kind of like that. And so there are little verbal markers that when you learn to work with each other, I think that's really key. I got this last question here. You're a futurist, you're an entrepreneur, you've seen the past, you've seen the future. Where do you think virtual is going now? What do you think is going to happen in the next 5 to 10 years or more?
Well, I don't know if I've seen the future, but I except for my own, because I'm a big fan of creating it, as we all do as entrepreneurs. Where is virtual going? Well, let me just spitball here a little bit. I think that it came up so fast for so many people, right? That then it was like, oh, I'm tired of this. And people were waiting to get back to normal and they were hoping it was over. And at the beginning, people viewed it as a band-aid and okay, I'll do this. I think what's really changed is that a lot of people are now embracing this with a new
Yes.
freedom and not just about remote work, like that's a whole other conversation, but just for ourselves, what can I do? How much time am I saving? Like I used to have my trainer come to used to meet him 3 times a week at the gym. Now we do it over Zoom and it saves him time, it saves me time, it's so much easier. So I do think that what will happen is people will probably stop trying to avoid the Zoom so much. I think there's going to be much better ways. If I look at all the new applications that Zoom has added, I believe this is just the start. I think that we can have different, like you do, look at what you have, look at what you did throughout the talk. Here's the book. Here's, you did a little meme. It's like, you know, live your mini life every day. And I think it's just going to become more fun and become closer and closer to being in person with respect to learning. It's not going to replace the, you know, the energy that transcends. But I do think for sure it's here to stay. I believe it's just going to keep getting better and people will use it to improve their lives versus look at it as, oh, I'm so tired of the screen, which, by the way, I think is really silly because I heard that, like, oh, I'm exhausted from Zoom and I can't look at a screen anymore. It's like, you were looking at the computer screen all day long anyways, even before virtual meetings and Zoom. Like, come on, that's not it. You're probably just talked out, but you're telling yourself is that you're alone and you can't make those two things work. So I think it will just kind of flow into a more natural state. What do you think?
Nothing but smiles over here, you know that, right? It's just like, what do I think is going to happen?
Yeah,
I do. You mean... I have another friend, Shelley Golden, who really says that people like lawyers and other people are finally stopped looking at it as temporary and finally starting to look at it as permanent. And once you get to permanent, you start investing. Like, you should stop gapping your stuff. You should really invest in what you have. And so I think you've seen my investment. Nobody has to really necessarily do this, but
look, it's me.
Yeah, this is just my version of investment. And that's what allows me to do some of the stuff that we do here. And I'm training other people to do it. And we finally got people over the hump. You know, what's great about that is, like, in Zoom, like, at least we can go to one platform and almost everybody in the world's been taught it. So that you can, like, not have to spend 10, 20 minutes training them on it. So I think that's the first hurdle that I had to get over on the technology piece. And now you've seen all these cool creative things, like working out, right? That's really cool. Social things happening. That's really cool. You know, talking to Nigeria today. That's really cool. So I think there are things like that. And the future is just going to try and figure out different ways to be more immersive. The other things to really watch for, we've been talking, lots of people talking about AI right now. For instance, right now, I do have an AI in here that's a speech coach, and it is going to pull my AI, and my number one goal for the year is to make not my number one word, Michelle.
Oh, so it tracks everything.
And yeah, I'm happy to tell you, like, I've moved to number six, and now I'm working on and like.
like is the worst. It's funny because my daughters are not teenagers anymore. They're grown women firmly rooted in their lives.
Yep.
But that generation really often has that whole like thing. And once you focus on it, that's all you hear.
Yes. And some of that generation say it a lot. And this is the best part, is, like, if you get a speech coach, PowerPoint has one too built in. Just have them do a talk or, like, run PowerPoint while they're on a phone call with a friend and then give them back the data. Oh, you'll blow them away.
That's a fantastic tip. I mean, I'm a professional speaker, so anything that will help me improve is fantastic. I would, though, say, don't get it to zero, because then you're going to sound, you're going to create distance, right? Because, like, oh my goodness, it's like a newscaster, right? Nobody wants to be that perfect.
Yeah.
But it's definitely that, you know, room for improvement. So thank you for those tips. I'm definitely going to look into that.
Awesome. Thank you so much. So they can get you a course at michellehecken.com, correct?
That is correct.
And do you got one final word for people before we head out of here?
Just whatever it is you're doing, be it in your personal life, in your business life, as an entrepreneur, as John said, really figure out what it is that you want first, because you have the opportunity to build anything around that serves you. And if the things around you serve you, then you're better serving the world. So I'll leave you with that. I just made that up. I hope it makes sense.
Thank you so much, Michelle. All right. So this is John Chen. We've been talking with Michelle Hecken here on Engaging Virtual Meetings Interview. Hey, you want to be interviewed? I want to take people and introduce them to my community, my family. I hope that you want to do that too. Click the button, engagingvirtualmeetings.com/meet. And if you're watching on any of these platforms, either click subscribe or follow. Hey, we'll see you next time. Have a great year 2023. Here we go. This is John Chen, the author of the Amazon number one hot new release, Engaging Virtual Meetings. I personally want to say thank you for listening to the Engaging Virtual Meetings podcast. It is my passion to help you eliminate bad virtual meetings. Make sure that you click subscribe so that you can get the latest episode of the Engaging Virtual Meetings podcast with all of the latest ideas. Hey, I want to meet you. If you want to talk about a virtual meeting challenge, or if you want to be the next guest on the Engaging Virtual Meetings podcast, just go to engagingvirtualmeetings.com/meet. That's engagingvirtualmeetings.com/meet, M-E-E-T, and find your best time to meet up. Thank you, and I look forward to engaging with you online.